Pour yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time, and we are a little over 2 weeks away from basically Christmas, Hanukkah, your birthday, everything rolled into one. If you are a fan of the College Draft podcast, because it's the actual NFL draft, which will be coming to the city of brotherly love where Fran resides and not too far from where I live on Thursday, April 27th. If you want to make sure that you are totally prepared and ready for that draft, there's only two things you need to do. Number one, go back and listen to any of the other positional breakdown podcasts that Fran and I have done that you may have missed. So any of the other college draft podcasts, that's number one. Number two, make sure you go to 2017draftdigest.com. We put a lot of time and energy into that. Use the code Ross when you get there. Again, 2017draftdigest.com. So you have a magazine for when you're working out, when you're on the commute, and just to have in front of you during the draft so you can see what we think of the players as they come off the board. Fran, always good to talk with you. Before we get into the D lineman, interior D line, which is who we're breaking down today, let's get into some news that happened this week, or just some of the buzz that's going on. I guess we'll start with a guy that you were telling me about that really caught your eye this week.
Yeah, Ross, last week we talked about the safety position and all the names that were associated with that spot, and I'll be remiss if I didn't mention NC State's Josh Jones, who I didn't get a chance to watch before the combine. He was one of a handful of players that I didn't watch before the trip out to Indy. He goes to India and he blows the doors off the 40. He ran 4.41 as a 220-pound safety. I mean, really, really impressive numbers. Had really impressive numbers really across the board as well. His jumps in particular were very impressive. And when you watch him on film, I mean, the kid's just an explosive heat-seeking missile. He's got a high motor. He's a really good tackler. He's a big hitter. He plays fast in terms of his ability to play sideline to sideline. And you're talking about a player who's 6'1 and a half, 220 pounds. He's got really long arms. Not surprised at all to see that a team like Minnesota is interested, because to me, he's a Mike Zimmer safety through and through, and that doesn't shock me at all that he would get interest. He's gotten some buzz from some of the bigger names in the draft community as a potential top 50, top 60 pick. And Jones, to me, when I watched him, and again, I watched him for the first time, actually right after we finished the show last week, after we finished talking about safeties, and I watched it for the first time, thought this kid, he could be a star as a strong safety. I mean, he's got some warts. He doesn't see things as quickly as you'd like right now. He started 33 games at the college level, so he does have some experience, but he doesn't see things as quickly as you'd like, and he can be a little over-aggressive at times. But overall, I mean, his physical skill set is really, really impressive, and I think ultimately he's going to be one of the first safeties off the board, probably one of the first five or six off the board.
So then what category, since you didn't put him in a category last week, what category would he go in?
I would say probably that he would go in like the, I like him, but he scares me a little bit, because I do like his physical skill set, but at the safety position, every step matters, and he does have good makeup speed for sure, but you don't like the false steps. You don't like how slow he is to read some things at times. And that was the one question. It's not awful, but I'd say it's probably like slightly below average. And that's just the one thing that gives me a little bit of pause with him. But he's got, I mean, if he can get past that hurdle, whether it's just his ability to key and diagnose and he just needs to get things coached up, whatever it is, if he can get past that hurdle, I think he could be one of the best safeties in the NFL when his career is at its peak.
What about some of the other buzz that's out there right now? I know Jason LaConfora is saying that he's hearing strong buzz about the Cardinals taking a quarterback, potentially even moving up from 13 to get a quarterback, and that the guy would be Deshaun Watson. What do you think of that one?
I think that it's interesting because, I mean, you look at that team. And really, it seems like they're all kind of gearing up. It's Larry Fitzgerald's potential last run. It's Carson Palmer's last run. And that's why they're looking at this quarterback position. You look at Bruce Arians, you know, how much longer is he going to be there? I think it seems like they're kind of gearing up for that final run. But that being said, you know, the general manager, Steve Keim, he's not going anywhere. I mean, there's plenty of people on that team and on that staff that aren't going anywhere. You got to gear up for the future as well. So I think it's a very interesting balance when you look at that team, the way it's built, and some of the key players that are involved, whether it's on the coaching side or on the field, and how there's got to be that balance between the here and now as well as the future. And they're a very interesting team. You don't see teams that are typically built that way picking in the top 13 of the draft, which is where they're at. I'll be very interested to see ultimately where they go in this class. And if they decide, you know what, let's wait on the quarterback and see if we can get him around later and then develop him and have him be Carson's understudy for a year. Or if they decide, you know what, Deshaun Watson is just too good to pass up on. Let's bring him in now. And that's what's funny is everyone's like, oh, I don't think Deshaun Watson is necessarily a Bruce Arians type quarterback. If Bruce Arians isn't there in 2 years or isn't there in 3 years, just due to health or whatever it is, obviously he's getting a little bit older. It doesn't matter if he's not a Bruce Arians quarterback. It ultimately comes down to, is he the best quarterback on the board that's going to be the franchise signal caller for the next 15 years? And that's what's going to be really interesting there with Deshaun Watson, ultimately with that 13th overall selection.
What about the buzz you're hearing about my boy Garrett Bowles?
Dude, everyone has him now going in like the top 10, top 15, and that's so intriguing. I don't know. Is that something that you potentially saw when you watched him? Did you see a guy that you thought, you know what, he could go in the top 10, top 15?
I thought he was the best offensive tackle. And so, you think about the importance of that position and you think about what teams are paying guys like Matt Khalil and Okung and some of these guys, Riley Reiff, to play left tackle. I mean, if they're willing to pay guys that much, then I can absolutely see a team thinking, you know what, we need to get a better tackle, whether it's left tackle or right tackle. He has that kind of feet, that kind of athleticism. And I think they probably also look at him, Fran, correct me if I'm wrong on his background. I know he had some issues in high school, whatever. He went the JUCO route. But this last year, was this his first year really starting at Utah?
It was his only year at the Division I level. He was in junior college, 16 months ago.
Yeah, that's amazing. See, I think people look at that and think, man, this guy has the potential to really even get a lot better very quickly, once he gets in our system, doing those type of things, lifting, gets with our coaches. So that does not surprise me. I think, if you really need an offensive tackle, do you not take him at 13 or 17, whatever the number is, because you think his value is more in the 20s? I tend to think that that's overrated. I mean, if you really like the player and you think the player is going to start for you and you think he's going to be a good player, I say you take him. And that actually brings up a question for me. So the answer is, Fran, I am buying it. My question for you, though, is we got a good question from Brian Cron on Tuckheads over at Tuckheads.com. And I know that the people that are already on Tuckheads probably already saw it, or at least some of them did. But I wanted you to answer it here on the College Draft Podcast as well. And that is your thoughts on when you're watching tape, do like the Alabama players benefit from playing with the other Alabama players? And how do you kind of separate that when you're watching tape?
I almost think of it in the same way as when I watch a small school kid, right? Because I try to isolate the player and I try and see what are his traits. So if I'm watching Jonathan Allen, I'm watching Jonathan Allen. I'm not watching Jonathan Allen. And obviously a little bit of it sneaks in. But I'm not watching Jonathan Allen and how he's impacted by Tim Williams and Dalvin Tomlinson and Ryan Anderson and Reuben Foster and Eddie Jackson and Marlon Humphrey and Minka Fitzpatrick. I'm watching Jonathan Allen and seeing what traits does he show that best transition to the NFL. And same thing I could say about Corey Davis. When I'm watching Corey Davis, I'm watching him against Ball State and he catches, three dozen passes for 300 yards and 8 touchdowns against Ball State. And he's making guys look silly out there. I mean, I think that if you almost look at it the same way. Look, some of these plays that he's making aren't necessarily going to always be there in the NFL, but look at the way he runs routes. And if it's Jonathan Allen, look at the way he uses his hands. Look at the way he's able to drop his anchor and hold up at the point of attack and set an edge if he's playing as a seven technique. Look how he's able to win with bend. Look how he's able to win with power. I mean, that's what I look for, is I look for the traits and I try and isolate. I don't think that guys that come from some of these, you know, really, really talented programs. I mean, look at this year. How many dynamic duos in the secondary do we see this year, whether it's in Washington with Sidney Jones and Kevin King, or it's in Ohio State with Marshawn Lattimore and Gary Conley, Florida with Quincy Wilson, Jalen Tabor. Those guys obviously do benefit from having the other on the other side, but I think all of them, and that's what happens when you're a good program, you recruit well, you develop well, and you're going to have really talented players. Look back at those Miami Hurricanes teams from the late 90s, early 2000s, and you know, if you could pick any given year from those years, and you go up and down the roster, and it's like first-round pick after first-round pick after first-round pick after Pro Bowler and all pros. I mean, there's just guys at every position that are just loaded. So I'm not going to fault the individual players for that, because we've seen players come from all of those top programs and have so much success. I do think that some people are worried about Alabama players in general, and, you know, are they overworked, and are they a product of the system, this, that, and the other. I look for traits. I look for how they best transition to the NFL. And to me, that's something that's worked for me. And I, from people that I've learned from, that's something that's worked for them as well.
I would agree. The only thing I would say is, like, when I watch high school recruits for Go Big Recruiting, like when I'm checking them out, we have like we evaluate kids with this Go Big Pro thing. And there's no question that your objectivity is challenged a little bit based on the level of competition, which can greatly vary at the high school level. You know, you see a kid killing like a team that looks terrible, it's like, okay. And you're trying to just look at the traits, but it's hard not to think, well, look who he's doing it against. And then conversely, you see a kid at a Texas 6A school, and you see the stands are packed and all that stuff, and it's hard not to let that seep in a little bit as well. By the way, friend, you probably didn't know this. You can actually bet on the draft. You can bet on the draft. Lots of different things you can bet on the draft. So take the knowledge that you've gotten from Fran and go to betdsi.com. And if you use the code Tucker15, you get a free $15 to bet the draft if you want. Again, betdsi.com. You can pick how many quarterbacks you think are going to go in the first round. I mean, there's a bunch of different betting options there. It's pretty cool, actually. Makes the draft even more entertaining than it already is. And I figured you guys would be interested in this, just like you're interested in today's D-line, Daddy Sodas.
Daddy Sodas.
All right, Fran, who's your favorite to watch on film? I think I already have a pretty good guess on this one.
Yeah, and I think really it comes down to Solomon Thomas and Jonathan Allen for me at that group. And not everybody has Solomon Thomas and Jonathan Allen in that group. I think when you look at their skill sets, though, both Solomon Thomas and Jonathan Allen, to me, look like interior players. I know Solomon Thomas came in at 273. I know Jonathan Allen came in at 286. To me, I think that where they both are best and where they both win is inside. And I think ultimately when their teams go to sub package, which we know is the majority of the time in today's NFL, they are going to be lining up inside just like they did when they were in college. And I look at Solomon Thomas, I see a player with really kind of unique burst for interior player. He tested off the charts for interior players at the scouting combine. And obviously that's to be understood with the way that he weighed in. But you look at his athletic ability, you look at the way he uses his hands, he's got the ability to win in a number of different ways. His go-to move is that swim move right off the ball, and he's just so effective as well on stunts because of his ability to move and kind of operate around the line of scrimmage. He's a really, really impressive player. He does need to get stronger, obviously. If he's going to play as a three technique at the next level, per se, he's going to have to get stronger. He may not have necessarily ideal length that people want for a five technique defensive end and a 3-4, which is what he was ultimately for Stanford. But I look at Solomon Thomas and I think he's one of the best disruptors in this class. He's a really smart player, a good run defender, and also a very smart pass rusher as well. Then you look at Jonathan Allen, built slightly differently, a little bit longer, a little bit taller, a little bit bigger, did not test as well as Thomas did. But, man, Allen is so quick off the ball. He's got a ton of pass rush value as well. When he lines up inside, he can win a number of different ways. He's got that swim move as well. He's got the ability to win with a hand swipe. That's really his kind of go-to move, whether he's lining up off the edge or even inside. Jonathan Allen, the only issue I've got with Jonathan Allen is that there are times where I don't think he anticipates as quickly as you'd like in terms of reading the screen game and the perimeter run game. And then also there are times where he's a little bit slow getting off blocks. But to me, I see a player that is a day one starter and a future Pro Bowler. So really you're kind of splitting hairs with Solomon Thomas and Jonathan Allen. I slightly prefer Thomas, but I like Allen a whole lot. I think that the idea of him dropping because of shoulder arthritis is kind of silly, because when you talk to – I mean, I talked to Allen at the combine, and Allen said, oh, well – you know, they said that I've got arthritic shoulders, but it's not going to impact me until much later in my life, until I'm in my 50s. That's when I'm going to start feeling it. It's not going to impact me when I'm playing in the NFL. So I think when you look at Jonathan Allen, I think what you see is what you get with him. I think he's going to be a really impressive player at the next level. I love both guys, Solomon Thomas and Jonathan Allen.
Give me a guy that's underrated by the media.
Yeah, the guy that I've liked throughout the process is Eddie Vanderdoes from UCLA. I loved his teammate, Kenny Clark, last year from the same program, from the same defense. And Vanderdoes, I think, does a lot of similar things, just in a slightly different way. And I look at Vanderdoes as a really strong run defender. He is stout. He is nasty. One of the most aggressive defensive linemen in this class. He's got the ability to win with power, but also he's got some finesse to him as well in terms of how he wins with his hands. You saw that in person down at the Senior Bowl. He's got a number of different moves he's able to win with as a pass rusher, whether it's with a swim move. He can win with a chop. He can win with a hump. He's got the bull rush as well. That's really, really effective for him. And then also just the way that he's able to anchor in two gap at the point of attack. I think that he fits in every scheme at the next level, whether you need him to be a two gapper and a 3-4, whether you need him to even be a one gap nose. I think he can be that. I think he's shed weight every step throughout the process. You know, he played at 330 in the fall, Ross. And then he goes to the Senior Bowl in January, checks in at 320, goes to the combine in February, checks in at 305. And then he was at 302 at his pro day. So he's clearly shedding those pounds right now. Some maybe think, all right, maybe he's shedding pounds just to test better. I think he's shedding pounds because he's trying to show, you know what, I've got that versatility to be able to play in a 4-3 if you need me to. Or if you want me to play in that 3-4, we know I can add that weight back on. And if I want to become a nose tackle, or if I want to become a defensive end in a 3-4, I've got the ability to do that as well. I like Eddie Vanderdoes. I think he's a top 75 pick in the draft.
Wow, all right. Well, tell me a guy or two that you like, but there's something about him that scares you.
Yeah, one of the most talented players, and you could argue that he's just as talented, if not even more physically gifted than the first two guys I talked about. That's Malik McDowell from Michigan State. I mean, he's 6'6", 299 pounds. He's got freakishly long arms, almost 35-inch arms for a defensive lineman. He lined up as a one technique, as the nose tackle for Harlan Bennett out there in Michigan State. But that's not his spot at the next level. I think ideally you're looking at him potentially as a three technique. He could line up as a defensive end in a 4-3. He could be a D end in a 3-4. He's got really good position versatility. What really impresses you about McDowell is his burst, his athletic ability. He did show off some of that at the combine. He didn't test necessarily as well as I thought he would, but still overall a really good performance out there in Indianapolis. He has the ability to win in a number of different ways. Considering his height, he plays with surprisingly good pad level and good leverage because he's got that ability to sink his hips. He's got that natural bend in his lower half, the ability to win with leverage. I really like Malik McDowell. A lot of people will crush him and say, oh, well, you know, he didn't play to the level that people expected him to. They had a really down season. Where was his motor late in the year? Someone on Twitter made a really good point last week. This was the first time he's ever gone through a losing season in his career. Obviously, he's a young kid. I mean, he's going to be a 21-year-old rookie. If you're not expecting him to come in and be the leader of your defense in year one, and you've got a good locker room around him and you feel like, you know what, you can come in, let's bring him into our culture and we feel comfortable that he's going to be able to adapt, I think you're going to get a really good steal in Malik McDowell, because some of those high motor play, I watched that Notre Dame game earlier in the year, Ross. Whew, I mean, that kid made some impressive plays sideline to sideline. And again, at 290 pounds, to see him move that way and then also win as a pass rusher, and also win as a run defender, He's a really impressive player. And to me, just based purely off talent and physical skill sets, he's a top 15 player in this draft. But people do have the questions, and ultimately it's going to come down to comfort level with the coaching staff that's bringing them in.
Anybody else?
Yeah, you know what? That's right. I wanted to mention Caleb Brantley from Florida, and he has gotten some love throughout the process. There are some people that I respect that have him ranked pretty high in this class in the interior defensive lineman group. I think that he can win with his first step. I think he's got good burst off the ball. I think he's got the ability to win with his hands as a pass rusher. But to me, I never saw a top 50, top 75 type player on tape. And one of the things that bothered me is I've watched him against Alabama each of the past 2 years, and he's really struggled in both games against Alabama. And to me, looking at him against the best competition, I would have liked to see him show up a little bit better in those two games. I didn't always see the natural power. I didn't always see the high motor. I mentioned that with McDowell. I saw that with McDowell. I've seen him chase perimeter runs down. I've seen him chase screen plays down, wide receiver screens outside the numbers. I've seen McDowell make those plays. I haven't necessarily seen Brantley even make those plays inside the numbers, where you see kind of like that relentless nature, you know, that competitive toughness that you'd like to see from an interior defensive lineman. Didn't always see that from Brantley. He does have ability, though, and I think as a pass rusher, as a potential three technique, a team could find, if they're able to harness his burst and harness his athletic ability, you might get a good player in the middle to late rounds. But I just a little bit of concern there with him against some of the top competition on the schedule.
Who's the quote-unquote safest player?
I think that when you look at a guy, and some people would count this guy as an edge player, but I think when you look at Chris Wormley from Michigan, who came in at 6'5", 298 pounds, he's got really long arms. I've talked with some people that have compared him to some of the best five-technique defensive ends that we've seen in recent memory, even some to a guy like Richard Seymour in New England, just in terms of body type. I mean, he's got a really impressive skill set. He's a very well-rounded player, and his versatility will serve him well. He was a defensive end, as a strong side defensive end in their 4-3 scheme, but he can line up. He did it in their 3-4 scheme a year ago as a defensive end. He could play as a defensive tackle in a 4-3. I mean, he's got that versatility to line up at a number of different spots. I was impressed by the way he used his hands, got a very deep pass rush repertoire, and I like that. I like that from a guy that can line up in a number of different spots and win in a number of different ways. I do wish he got a little bit better against the run. He's got good size if you like him as a defensive end. I just wish that he held up a little bit better and was a little bit more consistent setting the edge. But I do think that he's probably one of the most impressive and one of the most well-rounded players in this defensive line group. And I think that he's got a really high floor, and that, you know, at the very least, you're getting a really strong backup, a guy that can come in and play a number of different roles for you up front.
All right. I like it. What about a guy that you feel like is scheme specific?
Well, this is a player I know you've seen up close, right? When you went to the Notre Dame spring game last year, Jerron Jones is one of the most physically gifted players, I would say, in this defensive line group. It's not a particularly strong defensive line class this year when you factor in the interior guys. But I think when you look at Jerron Jones, who's got 35 and a half inch arms, he's 6'5" and change, he's 316 pounds, he moves well for his size, he's got the ability to win with power. I wish he was a little bit more polished as a pass rusher, and that's one of the big hangups that I've got with him, is that he doesn't use his hands all that well. He was coming off the bench this year. He was a starter earlier in his career, and he got injured in 2015. I think it was an MCL injury. And so he missed a good, I think, most of the season in 2015. So coming back this year, I was expecting some big things from him, and he ended up coming off the bench. So I do wish that he was a little bit more involved. But when you look at his skill set, he's a really impressive talent. And I think that if you're a 3-4 team looking for a 5 technique, he is a perfect fit as a guy that can come in and be a developmental 5 in year 1 with the ability to start in year 2 or year 3.
Give me a day 3 gem.
Well, I would throw Jones from Notre Dame in that mix. And then also a guy that caught my eye last year that really kind of impressed me, and he comes from not a small school, but from Conference USA, a team that came from scratch a few years ago, and that's from Charlotte and the 49ers, Larry Ogunjobi at 6'3", 305 pounds. He was the kind of one of the first team captains there when they started that program from scratch. He's a North Carolina kid who stayed at home to see that program get built. And he's been so productive. He started 46 games in his career. He started in 2013. It was their first year. He started 11 games that year. And when you look at his production, it's kind of eye-opening. But really, when you watch him on tape, you see a guy who plays really fast. He's got the ability to win in the backfield, win off the ball, and make plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage. He's a grinder. He's still learning how to work through blocks and use his hands at a high level, but he's relentless in trying to free himself when an offensive lineman engages him. I think if you're a 4-3 team looking for a one-gap penetrator, whether that's as a 3 or even as a 1 technique, I think he could play as a nose because he did that in their 3-4 scheme down there. I think if you're looking for a 4-3-3 technique or a nose, I think he could play either spot and be a really nice player coming from day 3.
All right. This category was new this year, but I kind of like it. 3-for-1. Give me 3 more guys.
Yeah, just 3 guys real quick. And I've always kind of grouped these 3 together for whatever reason. And I think that first off is Jahleel Johnson from Iowa. 6'3", 316 pounds, was one of the early standouts from the week of practice down there in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. I like his play strength. I think he's a pretty good athlete, and he's got the ability to defend the run. I wish he used his hands a little bit better as a pass rusher and was a little bit more consistent with his motor. But Jahleel Johnson, I think, has the ability to be a very good penetrator up front, and he's a guy that really intrigues me. Then you go to Montrevious Adams from Auburn, who I have slightly below Johnson. I think Montrevious Adams, he's kind of polarizing. Some people like him, and some people are not very high on him at all. He reminds me in some ways of current Kansas City Chiefs defensive tackle, former Philadelphia Eagle Benny Logan, coming out of LSU a few years ago. In that, you know, he's got that 3 technique body right now, but I think ultimately his skill set lends himself more to being a nose tackle at the next level. I think Adams is a pretty good run defender. He's a high motor kid. He's got the ability to win with burst, but I think ultimately his strength comes from defending the run. Once he starts to build up that body, add some more body armor to his frame, I think Adams has the ability to develop into that kind of a player. And then Tavon Godshaw is another guy who's a little bit polarizing from LSU. 6'3", 310 pounds, didn't test all that well. He had the off-field issue this past fall that was exonerated pretty much right away. Pretty impressive athlete, though. He's got some natural bend to him. He's also got the ability to defend the run. So you're talking about a player who could be pretty well-rounded. You want to check out the off the field. You'd like to see him get a little bit stronger, but about a player that could develop into a pretty solid NFL starter with a very well-rounded game and fit into either a 4-3 or even potentially as a 3-4 in a sub-package role. I think LSU's Tavon Godshaw is pretty intriguing as well.
I love it. I got 3-for-1. You ready, Fran?
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear your 3-for-1.
Okay, number one, make sure you always catch Fran on his Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast every week, talking about the game of football from the All-22 vantage point. Number two, right now at the end of the podcast, before you forget, go to 2017draftdigest.com so you can get our awesome draft preview magazine. We are extremely proud of it, and you can put in the code Ross or Fran if you'd like when you do that, just so they know we sent you. And number three, don't forget, why don't you put a little wager on the draft this year? Not a lot of people bet the draft. It'd be fun. I think I'm going to do it this year, make it even more entertaining. Just when you do it, go to betdsi.com and use that code Tucker15. What position do we have next week, Mr. Duffy?
Well, we have our last position preview next week, and it's hard to believe, but it's our last one, and we're going with the strength of this class. We're going with the cornerback spot. So I think next week, Ross, is going to be one of those weeks where we get into Daddy Sodas, and I start like rolling off like 5-6 names, and you're telling me to shut the hell up at like the 5-minute mark. So looking forward to it.
Why don't you have a nice warm cup of shut the hell up? I love it. Fran, you're the man. Everybody listening, you are the men and women. Love when you get involved in on Tuckheads and love the retweets. He is at FDuffy3. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL and the podcast at RTF Podcast for all the different RT Media podcasts. For right now, though, the keg is kicked. We are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft. Chug. Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.